Corner with Coach Butch McAdams. The show is sponsored in part by Horton's Funeral Services, Dr. Edward T. Buford, and the Athletic Republic. And as always, powered by the African American Athlete.com. And that means my producer, golfer extraordinaire, he is Rick Hampton Sr. Well, folks, I couldn't wait for 7 p.m. Eastern time to roll around, because I knew that I would get a knock on the door. And when I opened the door to the locker room and the coach's corner, it would be one of the greatest shooters of all time and the premier spokesperson on the art of shooting. He is Buzzy Brayman, a.k.a. the Shot Doctor. Hey, Buzzy, man, this is an honor, man. Good gracious.
Now, listen, first of all, it's a pleasure. Second of all, could you back that bumper music up again and let's get Don Cornelius and grab a girl and let me go down that Soul Train line one time to that music?
Well, you know what? The rest of the music for the next hour and some change that we're going to hear is string music, because that's what we would hear when you would shoot the ball. Nothing but string music. And
that's very kind of you. Thank you. That's great.
Now, Buzzy, starting off, I'm not going to ask you. I don't know. Maybe later on I may. But word on the street was that you did besides being a great shooter and an even greater shooting coach, but the other word I got was that you could do a mean imitation of Daffy Duck.
Oh.
I'm not asking you to do it tonight, but I just confirm or deny. is that true?
It is so funny because I do like, I don't even know, 15, 20 voices. And I let the coach, Bear Coach John Barrett, know I was going to be on, you know, your station, and I bet he threw me and John Bilal out of practice 20 times for doing Three Stooges imitations in the middle of practice when he wasn't looking. I've been known to sit in the middle of class while they was doing a test, and all of a sudden I'd do like a Donald Duck sneeze where I'd be like, you know, and then I'd look around like everybody else, like, who did that? You know, so,
right.
It was good times.
No question. And speaking of good times, I want to get your thoughts starting off on the NBA restart. Teams are in camp, they're in Florida. But, you know, every day we get a report of players testing positive. Our own DMV, Michael Beasley, is being reported that he was sent home due to testing positive.
Yeah, I think especially the young people. I mean, I see here in West Palm Beach and Palm Beach, young people tend to think that they're invincible, and you know, people are walking around with no masks on because you know they're 20 something years old. And, you know, they figure even if they get it in 2 weeks, you know, they'll be done with it. But, you know, there's not enough research to know if they're going to be done with it, you know. And this is some – we're in territory that we don't know what the outcome is yet. But people, like I say, you know, they're I walked in downstairs into Ruth's Chris the other day. They closed the bar, but there was about 15 people that were – all standing together with no masks on, you know, as the partying like it's 1999. And I'm going, you know what? I'm out of here. So I left. But,
yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know what to tell you. It's for real. You know, it is nothing to not pay attention to. But these guys don't. You know,
yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah. Let's talk about. It's well documented in the last couple of months due to Kevin Durant's documentary on Showtime in terms of Prince George's County basketball. And a lot have been written and said about D.C. with Elgin Baylor and Dave Bing and Austin Carr. But let's talk about Montgomery County and its rich history right across the line, Silver Spring, Rockville, Tacoma Park. You guys have a history of basketball. None better than Buzzy Brayman to talk about that history.
Well, no, you know, you're right. But, you know, back in those days, it was, I don't know, it was almost like people would think of us as, you know, the white kids from the suburbs. You know, they can't play ball. But the fact of the matter is we would go looking for guys to play. You know, we would go down to the Armory. We would go down to Rock Creek Park or Number 11 Boys Club down, you know, across from St. Elizabeth's, you know, and looking for guys. You know, we were trying to make our own reputations, you know, so they would look at us like we the, you know, like the rich kids from the suburbs, and we wasn't tough. But meanwhile, you know, Coach Barrett was from Anacostia, and ain't nobody tougher than him. And you know, we always felt like we had something to prove. You know, every time I played, I always felt like I had something to prove. You know, because they look at me like, oh, you know, here's some rich kid, you know, from Silver Spring. You know, I was like, all right, well, come on, let's go. You know, my game will do the talking. You can talk all the trash you want. Let's see what happens at the end. You know, I used to say, guy, because you see that picnic table, you're gonna be sitting right there when we're done. So you know, it was a pride, you know, it was a pride thing for us in Montgomery County, because you know we were thought of as less than, you know, and I'm sure when Coach Barrett took over, you know, coming with his upbringing, he was probably thinking the same thing. You know, oh boy, here we go. You know, we got the, you know, these white kids from the suburbs that probably can't play a lick and they're soft. And, you know, that just wasn't true. I mean, you know, we were nothing soft about us. So, you know, we were looking for those guys, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was a great era. And now I just loved it, you know, every day, you know, going down to Rock Creek Park or Sligo Creek Park and, you know, bring in your game and let's see where you're at. So, you know, I think it was a great time. I think, you know, I think AAU helped ruin a lot of guys, when it became all about me and, you know, we work on our game in the summer and, you know, it wasn't about drawing attention to yourself. It was trying to get better. So where do you get better? You go down to the Armory and play against Adrian Danley and Donald Washington, and you know, you're either going to sit down, you know, in a game to 11, or you're going to stay on the court. So you know, you get a degree of toughness. Otherwise, you know, ain't nobody picking you, and that's it. So
yeah,
that's the way it was.
Yes, let's talk about some of those great players that I recall, and you can add some as well. But when I think of Montgomery County basketball, I think of people like Billy Gordon. I think of people like Willie Allen. I think of people like Ed Peterson, Brian Maggett, Cedric Boltman, you know, Buzzy Brayman, just to name a few. Craig Esserick was a pretty fair shooter in his own right.
No, Craig, you know, there's I haven't seen the game film of when we won the state championship, but it really changed when Craig came in and a guy named another 10th grader, Paul Bunning, you know, it changed the dynamic of the game. And guys like, and Cedric, every time I see Cedric Boltman, which is like every, I don't know, 5, 8, 10 years, it's so good. I mean, that dude is a stud. And I was just talking with Brian Maggett today, and you know, I mean, you talk about somebody could ball, and you know, I met Eddie Peterson by accident, and he's kind of the godfather of shooting, you know, and kind of started it. You know, he was ground zero, and you know, there wasn't anybody better, you know, than him and Brian, you know, and when they talk about the best shooters, you know, from Montgomery County, I always say it, you know, at that time it was Eddie was number one and Brian was number two, and then maybe I was number three. But, you know, Eddie could shoot the lights out, and Brian as well, and deep. And, yeah. And, you know, there was no three-point line back then. So, you know, these guys were dropping in 25, 30-footers, you know, like they were free throws, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like Pistol Pete, you know, somebody went back and did every game, and instead of averaging 44, he would have been in like 58 a game if they'd had a three-point line.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Buzzy Braman is in the coach's corner, and Buzzy, you'd mentioned Coach Barrett and those really great teams. I mean, I just have so much respect for Coach. He's right up there with the Morgan Wootens and the Joe Gallaghers and the Joe Dean Davisons of the D.C. area in terms of coaching. But Springbrook was always, from my perception, known for great shooters. Was that coincidental, or was that was something that was, you know, based on coaching and environment?
No, I think from a coaching standpoint, you know, Coach Barrett changed the dynamic. You know what I mean? At least you know, I was the first sophomore to play at Springbrook, you know, on the varsity. But Coach Barrett was no-nonsense, tough, and, you know, he expects you to bring it in practice every day as well as games. As far as the shooting, like I said, Eddie was ground zero. And, you know, me, I think I was his first pupil. And but from my standpoint, I was a little bit different because I was a point guard. So, you know, I wasn't a two guard or a small forward. So I had other responsibilities, you know, and, you know, I shot 8 free throws a game, you know, because I like taking the ball to the hoop. So, yeah, I could shoot it. But the shooters, you know, it all sprung from Eddie and, you know, it went to me and Craig Escherich and our team that won the state championship. I think we shot 68% from the floor in that game. And you know, our tallest guy was 6'5", but I'll tell you what, there was 5 guys on the court that if you left anybody open, it was over. And, you know, there was all you had to do was, you know, spread the floor, you know, penetrate, and there you are, like Steve Kerr following Michael Jordan around. So, you know, that's the way it was.
Yeah, and I had a chance to speak with the great Stacy Robinson, and he told me to tell you hello. And then he said he can recall going to that state championship game out at Cole Fieldhouse, and he was saying every 30 or 40 seconds or so, the PA announcer would say, "Basket by Braman, basket by Braman."
Well, at what point did you
and others realize that you were a special shooter?
Eddie took me under his wing, and it took me like several months of like working 3 and 4 hours a day, you know, just on that, on the mechanics of what he showed me. And once the muscle memory kicked in, then because I always had a quick first step, and I it's like Jimmy Lynham, who was the first coach to hire me with the 76ers, he always used to say, listen, you can't stop both. You can take away somebody's jump shot by, you know, jamming them, but when you do that, you're going to get beat going to the hoop. And if you can take away his drive, but when you take away his drive, you're going to open up his jump shot. So you can't stop both. So you kind of pick your poison. And and with me, I always felt like that's, you know, how, you decide how you're going to play me, because you pick your poison. You can stop one or the other, but you can't stop both. You know, if you're going to get up on me, I'm going by you. If you don't get up on me, then I'm going to shoot it. And, you know, it's a simplistic way to look at it, but it really is the truth. I mean, it always amazed me because basketball players aren't the smartest guys in the world, because when you look at somebody like Iverson, who's not from our area, but kind of from our area, mm-hmm. he was a streaky shooter. And, you know, to me, if you were playing him and I was your coach, I'd say, listen, if he gets into the paint, you're going to be sitting next to me. Mm-hmm. If he beats us from 20 feet, then that's on me.
That's right.
But these guys get up, you know, on Allen Iverson 25 feet from the basket, and he's by you so quickly into the paint that you're dead. And if you're going to pick your poison, Iverson's going to have to beat me shooting 20 footers, you know, like LeBron. You know, LeBron has to beat me shooting 20 footers because I just keep spacing him, you know, and if you let him drive by you, you're dead. But if you make him shoot jumpers, you know, if his jump shot was like Michael Jordan's, we wouldn't even remember Michael Jordan.
You told me, and as great of a shooter as you were in high school, and I'm looking at the 1973 All-Met team, and what a team. Adrian Dantley, yeah. Hall of Famer, Larry Wright, who made it to the league, Bruce
yep.
Buckley, Arthur Daniels, yep. Billy Langlow, Slim
yeah.
Joyner, Larry Hearn. I mean, it goes on and on. What
yep.
a tremendous team. But you said
yep.
something in a conversation off air that, Coach, I was a really good shooter in high school, college, but, man, after high school, and I don't know whether it was during college or after college, where you said you really figured it out, and then that's
right.
when you became an iconic shooter. Talk about
yeah,
that.
It was an amazing occurrence because, like I said, Eddie Peterson took me under his wing, like he took Brian. I was with Eddie when we met Brian Maggett for the first time, and we started working with Brian. So, you know, the three of us are you know, kind of always like, you know, hand in hand. But I was with Eddie always trying to figure out, and he taught me so much. I'll say 60% of everything I know about shooting, Eddie taught me. And as the years went by, my goal was to be able to shoot it as good as Eddie Peterson, because nobody shot it like that. And I worked so hard, you have no idea, but there was a gap. You know, I got better than everybody else, but there was a gap. I still was not Eddie Peterson. And I was always asking him, I said, Eddie, what am I doing wrong? Like, and then about 6 months, I noticed he was holding the ball in his hand a certain way, like his thumb was fairly close to his index finger, like a short grip. And I went, oh, maybe that's it. So I changed my grip for about 6 months, and that didn't work out too well. And then I realized that the reason he held the ball like that was that he had small hands. And I'm like, dang, I just wasted 6 months, you know, holding the ball the way I thought Eddie held it, and that didn't work. So I still got better than everybody else, but there was that gap. So my playing career ended, and I ended up in Miami in the car business, you know, with my basketball career ended, not because I wanted it to, but some unfortunate circumstances happened.
Sure.
But I was in Miami, still hooping, and I took a shot, and the ball, you know how sometimes you take a shot and the ball roll off your hand funny? So I took a shot and it rolled off wrong, and I was like, dang, what the heck was that? So I picked the ball up, and I swear to you, Coach, in an hour and 15 minutes, I figured the gap out between me and Eddie,
mm-hmm.
and three other things that I didn't even know existed. And I worked on this for about 2 weeks. And about 3 weeks later, I couldn't miss a shot if I wanted to. And I was sitting there, I was playing in Miami back in those were the cocaine cowboy days. And everybody come, hoop. And then everybody be, look, you got to watch this kid. You got to watch this kid play. And, I could literally, I did a shooting demonstration for the 76ers at Villanova, shooting college threes on the move, and made 246 out of 250 and hit the first 92 in a row. And stuff like that was like, that was every day. And I remember I used to say, I wish Coach Bear could see me now. He wouldn't believe it because I had it figured out, beyond. And I'm like going, how do you like that, man? My career is over, and now I figure it out? I've been chasing Eddie for 5-8 years, and now, it don't do me no good. So I'm in the car business, and I got my family owns 23 car dealerships, Rolls Royce, Bugatti, you name it. And I'm running these car dealerships, and I got a big chunk of equity, making a ton of money. And I'm walking through the BMW showroom one day in 87, 88, and like a bolt of lightning, I just stopped dead in my tracks, and I said, you know what? What I just figured out, I can teach. It's teachable. And I came up with a business plan, wrote it all down, walked into my uncle's office, gave him back all his equity, and he said, what are you going to do? I said, isn't it? It's Norman Brain. I said, Norm, I'm going to become the first full-time shooting coach ever hired in NBA history. I said, I got a way to teach what I can do. And it took me a little bit over a year. And sure enough, I made it. And then when I got a hold of Chris Webber, and he went from not being able to make a shot, so he couldn't miss a 17-footer. And then he ended up telling, everybody. So I sat on the bench, as assistant coach, shooting coach for 9-10 years. And then I had so many people asking to hire me that, I left Washington and spent the last 13 years, with guys just beating my door down, trying to hire me. So it turned into a teachable method for kids, for anybody. I mean, I put like 111 kids on full scholarship that went to my shooting camps, because there's things about shooting that people don't know. They don't even know it exists. So I got it figured out, and ended up having a 23-year run at it, and it was just the best. It was a blast, and I explained things to people that are very logical. And I don't know if you remember, but there was one of the championships where the Pistons won. I had spent the summer with Isaiah, and I still have the note, because in one of the championships runs, he made like every three imaginable, and I have a note from him that says, "I wish I'd have met you when I was in eighth grade," and it was I changed like two little things on his shot, and that's all it took. And it's an amazing art form that not too many people know about. And people get, all hung up in handling, they want to handle like Iverson, they want to do this, they want to do that. But the fact of the matter is, the game's changed. And, guys, they're playing European-style ball. They're spreading the floor. And now if you can stand still and make a 20-footer, you got a career. And, guys can't do it. And I always say, well, let me ask you a question. If somebody like Mark Jackson, what's the point guard from Dallas's name? Light skinned. Oh my God, point
Jason
guard.
Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd was not athletic to be able to shoot a basketball? How come Jason Kidd could not shoot? And nobody got an answer. And the fact of the matter is, there's only five parts of the shot, and he did three out of the five wrong. So it don't matter that Jason Kidd, like all NBA players, say, well, this time I'm going to shoot 500 balls a day. Well, you shoot 500 balls a day the wrong way, all you're doing is getting better at being bad. So it don't do any good to you know, it's like your golf swing. Your golf swing is fundamentally wrong. You can hit 500 balls a day. You're going to reach a certain level, and that's going to be the end. So, you know, practicing, you know, that saying, you know, practicing does not make perfect. You know, practice makes permanent. So perfect practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
And if you practice wrong, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. You talked about the five components of shooting. Can
yes.
you break it down? Because there are a lot of our listeners who
yes.
may not know the game
no,
of basketball,
yeah,
and some
know,
who do, but not aware of those components.
No, I got to tell you, Coach, it's so funny because when I do clinics or whatever with, you know, I got a bit of a smart aleck attitude. You know, I'll do like I remember one time I did a college coach's clinic, and I always start out the same way. I say, Coach, I said, y'all tell me everything y'all know about shooting. And I hear the same thing. I see bend your knees, square up, elbow in, follow through, backspin, guide hand, you know, and then I say, are y'all done? Yeah, but you're done. So I look at him, I say, don't take this the wrong way. How come y'all can't shoot then? If everything you just spit out to me, bend your knees, square up, elbow in, follow through, blah, 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 then why can't they shoot? And then everybody's like dumbfounded. And so I started this way. And I'll ask you two guys. Okay, so what's the definition of a made jump shot, let's say? So most people say, well, you know, if the ball goes in. Well, no, we got to think a little bit deeper. Now you got to remember, my dad was a federal judge, so I was brought up to think logically. If you walk out on the court right now, and, Coach, you shoot a 17-footer and it goes in, two things happened on that shot. See if you agree or disagree.
Okay.
In order for the ball to go in, it's got to go straight, doesn't
That's
it?
That's right.
If it doesn't go straight, you're going to be missing to the left and to the right.
That's correct.
But if you can make it go straight, and you can make it go straight every time, does that mean every shot's going to go in? No, because there's
no.
two other ways you can miss. What are
That's
they?
Right.
Short and long.
That's right.
So there's only four ways you can miss. Left, right, short, long. And when you make a shot, whether you realize it or not, on that shot, it went straight, and you judged the distance correctly. And what if I told you that there are five governing properties, let's say, that control those two things? Like, I can make every ball go straight, every one. And if it misses to the left, it won't miss to the left twice because I fix it. And short and long is depth perception. And there's only four ways you can miss. And I figured out what controls those two things. It's as simple as that. Sounds simple. But what I can do is I can make every ball go straight, and I have a better way to judge distance than just my touch or natural feel. There's actual a couple of mechanics that make your depth perception hone in 100 times better than what you're doing. And the beauty of the system and method that I came up with is all five things happen in order. And it's such a beautiful thing when it's explained. It's like, for example, when you let's compare it like golf. Okay, when you go to hit a golf ball, you have to hold the club correctly, don't you?
Okay.
I mean, if you don't hold the club right, you're in trouble from the get-go. So you have to be in a what's position do they call that in golf? When you're in your stance and getting ready to hit, you're gripped and you're standing in your position to hit a golf ball. Well, I call that in basketball shooting home base. You have to be shooting gripped in home base when you catch a ball. So there's a correct way to hold the ball with your right hand. There's a correct way to hold the ball with your left hand. If you don't hold the ball right, just like if you don't hold the golf club correctly, it's going to start off chain reaction of things that's going to go wrong. So number one, 90% of all kids hold the ball wrong from the get-go, because when they're 7 years old, shooting at a 10-foot basket at a man's ball, they put one hand on one side, one hand on the other side, and then they're throwing that thing with two hands, and they're dead from the get-go.
Yes.
So you have to hold the ball correctly, and your shot starts at the same place every time. And so think about it. When you go off to dribble, you know, let's say you're dribbling to the right, and then when you stop, when you pull up, both hands touch the ball, and it's usually right around your crotch area. And that's what I call home base. That's where your shot starts. And from there, that's step one, and then four things happen in order to the release. And if you don't know what those five things are, then you got no chance. You got no chance to fix it. And when I was Chris Webber's shooting coach for like 7 years, and it was a dirty job. Somebody had to do it because he dated Tyra Banks for 2 years, so I had to babysit her. You know, it was tough. But
yeah,
it was tough.
That sounds tough.
Yeah, man. Anyway, so, I changed Chris' shot in 4 days. And at the end of 4 days, he literally could not believe it. And he used to practice 2 and 3 hours a day. And people always used to say, you know, how could a guy who couldn't make a shot in college, in high school, end up being one of the better, 15, 17-foot power forward shooters, and shot 80% from the line? And it's five things. I had to change four out of the five things. And once I did, it was over. And it doesn't matter. The great thing is it doesn't matter whether it's Chris Webber or an 11-year-old girl. The five mechanics are the same. So when people ask me, well, what are they? I go, wait a second. I spent $110,000 of my own money to make it to the NBA. If you think I'm giving up these five things without getting paid, you're talking to the wrong person. So, I do everything for free for any and every underprivileged kid. I used to spend every summer with Penny in Memphis, working with the kids that could never afford, to hire me or Penny.
Sure.
But I won't take a dime from people that can't, afford it. But if you live in Palm Beach over there with, Rush Limbaugh and the Kennedys, and you ask me to teach you for free, that ain't happening. But
no,
I gave up a magnificent share of 23 car dealerships to do this. So this is what I get paid to do. So when people say, how do you do it? I charge. I don't charge what I charge NBA guys. Is it $2,000 a day? And when agents, I got to tell you, I'm gonna make this really short. Chris had an agent. His name was Salishaw Irwin, and Salishaw was not the biggest fan. How should I say this delicately, Coach?
Okay.
Salishaw is not the biggest fan of white guys. It
okay.
happens. And we
okay.
know what happens on – we know what happens. So Chris wanted to hire me, and I had to meet with Salishaw. And Salishaw, he didn't like me from Jump Street. So he asked me how much I want. Chris was going into his last year. And the last year, the least Chris would have made the following year would have been $90 million, guaranteed for 7 years. The max would have been $126 million. So I'm talking to Chris's agent, Salishaw, and he goes, what does he need you for? He don't need you. he's going to make $90 million. I said, yeah, he's going to make $90 million. He's going to make $90 million with no jump shot. I said, if he pays me what I want, he's going to get $126 million. And if I'm not mistaken, you get 3% of that contract. So you're going to get 3% of $36 million. And I said, and if you can afford not to have that money, then give it to me. I said, but if you hire me, I promise you, you're going to get every dime. And he looked at me and he smiled and he goes, almost like Denzel in Training Day. He goes, my man. Oh, that's how Chris and I got together. And for his whole career, I was with him, and he got the $126 million. And he never stopped working on his shot. He never stopped. He was never satisfied, you know, because he wanted to be there, you know, in the same breath with the Tim Duncans. And I always tip my hat because Penny Hardaway was the same way. Would not stop practicing. So it was a beautiful thing.
Let's talk about, and again, folks, a lot of people can put on the clinics and use players as demonstrators. But
right.
During your peak, you were your own demonstrator. And listen, people know me know that I was a pretty good free throw shooter. I was pretty good. But as you just stated, you are almost impossible to beat in a game of horse because your go-to shot, if it were close, all you had to do was just go to the free throw line, and the guy knew that you could hit well over 200 consecutive. That's a lot of mental pressure.
Well,
go ahead, Buzz.
That is so funny because I play when people want to shoot for money.
Right.
I play horse, but we run it twice, so 10 letters, H-O-R-S-E, H-O-R-S-E.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't beat me in horse. People don't understand, and I showed Brian a picture. I had a guy about a year and a half ago who was supposed to be like a great shooter and a poker player, and I play poker, you know, pretty high-level poker player, and he flies around the country and takes money from guys shooting hoops. So they told me about him, and they got him on the guy got him on a text and said, I got a guy here who says he can beat you, meaning me. And I made sure I said the guy, make sure you tell him the guy's an older guy. So he texted me, goes, the guy, older guy here says he can take you. And so the guy texts back, how much does he want to play for? So the guy says to me, he wants to know how much you want to play for. So I said, text back, how much can he afford to lose? So I get a message back, and he goes, want to play for $5,000. So I had the guy text back. I said, is that all? And he goes, well, what do you want to play for? I said, my wallet's open. I said, pick what you're comfortable losing. So it ended up $10,000. I called a policeman friend of mine, and we both showed up at LA Fitness because I don't know this guy from Adam. All I know is nobody's walking out that gym with their money back. So we each gave the policeman, each of us, the bag. And he's about 35 years old, and he could shoot it. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, he could shoot it. If you all saw him, you go, man, that young man can shoot it. So here's what happens. I've had both my hips replaced, so I can't jump. My only rule when I play people for money is, that, you know, no jumping in the air and putting it through your legs and dunking because I can't. But you want to shoot from 60 feet, go ahead. Anyway, he starts out. He goes to about 30 feet, shoots it. Now, 30 feet used to be in my range, but I can't jump anymore because of the hips. So for me, a 30-footer is like 50-50. So I miss. So I got age. So he goes to the corner and goes off the court and makes it. And I miss it. So it's now H-O. And he got this big old grin like he's counting his money already. And then he misses the third shot. And that was the end of the game. Because I went to 18 feet, and what he didn't understand about horse is it's possession of the ball.
That's
because
right.
Because he can't make 90 shots in a row from 18 feet, but I can. So I said to him, you right in the middle of the Chinese water torture in short pants right now, pal. So the first game was over, and I said to him, I said, listen, you can take $5,000 back now. I said, and we're done with it. I said, but if we play again, then I'm gonna take all of it. I said, it's on you. I said, I don't need your money. We're good. He goes, no, I got you. He says, your problem is your range. I said, my problem is going to be figuring out what to do with your money. I said, but you go ahead and start. And 28-footer in, and I missed it. And then he missed it. And that was the end of the game.
Wow.
So the last two shots, I was talking to Brian today about this. I went to the foul line, and when I called it, I said, the ball's got to go in, and it's got to hit the right side of the rim when it goes in. And he looked at me like I was from Mars. And so I did hit the right side of the rim. And then on the last one, I said, it's got to hit the left side of the rim. And those were the last two letters. And it's just, so, you know, I walked out, you know, with his money. But it's just that people don't realize the level that you can get to shooting a ball and at game speed. I mean, you know, it's one thing to, you know, when I do demonstrations, I shoot them like free throws. And I always tell people, I say, listen, what you just watched me do, that's what I call demonstration speed. That ain't game speed. I said, but then I show them what game speed is, and I do the same thing, except 100 times faster. And all I'm doing is the same five mechanics, but faster. And so when you watch, you know, like a Steph Curry, and if you blink, I mean, Steph Curry don't jump but an inch, but if you blink, the ball's gone. And, you know, that's kind of, that's what I do because, you know, when they had that line for a hops, apparently I missed that call that day. So, you know, but I get my shot off in a blink of an eye. So, you know, you shake somebody off balance, you can't jump when you're off balance. So all you got to do is have a repertoire that gets somebody off balance, and your shot should be already in the air. And so that's, you know, that's what I teach. And, you know, it's just a shame that people don't know. So many coaches don't know. And they got all these guys, all NBA teams have these shooting guys that are basically just doing shooting drills, you know, because the guys ain't getting any better because they honestly – All they know is bend your knees, elbow in, square up, follow through, and all the usual stuff. But that ain't it. So, you know, what can I tell you?
Folks, this is special. I know you are enjoying this. I mean, I am in basketball heaven with this discussion on shooting with simply the best, Buzzy Brayman. Now, Buzzy, please share with our listeners the story that you shared with me where you did a shooting demonstration to raise money to donate.
Oh.
Yeah, please talk about that.
No, I don't – Coach, did you get the picture? Because I don't know if
I
it did. Came through.
I did. Yes, I did.
It did come
yes.
through.
Yes.
So I was coaching in Orlando with the Magic during the Shaq and Penny era, which was good. It was just a 3-year period. It was just to say it was magical is not the word, but in any event, one of Springbrook's alumni is a dear friend of mine, Victor Brick. And Victor saw the health club business 35, 40 years ago before anybody. And he was a great ball player, fierce ball player, for Springbrook, for Coach Barrett. And he owned a health club right near where the Magic, where we played. And the health club was 40,000 square feet. It had a very short full court where the older guys used to play 4-on-4. And we were playing 4-on-4 one day, and there was a gentleman named Michael O'Hora He was 52 years old, and he was a very good player. And, you know, on a short court, you know, when you get older, you'll play defense on a short court, but ain't nobody 52
no.
years old running 92 feet. You know what
no.
I mean? That's why, you know. But we used to have intense four-on-four games. His kids were the same age as mine, and we were playing one day, and we walk off the court, and Michael has a heart attack and dies right there. And we were, like, in shock. We go to his house, and we didn't know that he lived. There was no wife, and he lived in a roach-infested, you know, when he opened the door, you know, they all take off. It was enough to make you throw up. And the reason this poor man died was he didn't have the money for his heart medication. So we had to raise money for these kids. And I was married at the time, so my wife was like, you know, we got to do bake sale, car wash, and, you know, I come up with an idea. And my brainstorm, because I'm an idiot, is I'm well-known because I'm, you know, with the Magic. So I said, I'm going to go around to companies and individuals. I'm going to call the media. We're going to come to Victor Bricks Club, and I'm going to shoot free throws for 1 hour straight. One ball and one person throwing it back. And I'm going to get people and companies to pledge money for every shot made in 1 hour. So that's what I did. So we got a couple hundred people in. We got the media there, and I got, you know, I got a guy feeding me, and I got one ball, and I got to make shots. I got to get shots off, but if I don't make them, there ain't no money being made. So I always ask people, how many shots do you think you can get off in an hour? Just get off. And then how many think you can make in an hour? Because I'm trying to get paid. I'm trying to get paid and get money for these kids. So, I'm not sure if there's two people in the world that could have done it, but I did get off 1,144 free throws and made 1,121.
Wow.
That's like 99% shooting a ball like faster, you know, than humanly possible. And the ironic thing is the crowd went nuts. And like with 20 minutes left, I got pain in the back of my right shoulder, coach. That's where it's like I'm getting stabbed with every shot. But, you know, you got to fight through it. I mean, it's for these kids. So I get done, and the crowd goes nuts. I walk off the court, and this, like, 12, 13-year-old boy looks at me, and he goes, the crowd's going nuts. And the kid looks at me, and he goes, yeah, but can you dunk? And I'm about to grab that little fucker by the throat. I swear to God, and I was like, you know what? That's so typical. But it was we raised over 60-some-odd thousand dollars. We got the kids' prepaid college funds. All three graduated from Florida, and it was a beautiful thing. But it was a great feeling for me, you know, to raise that much money. And like I said, it's like no matter where the ball comes, you got to catch it and shoot it and make it happen. And you know, 1,121 out of 1,144 is almost 99%. So
yeah,
that's without pause and that's without nothing. So
yeah, those were great.
That's
yeah.
doing five things. Mm-hmm. That's it. Five things.
Those were great numbers. But also, and listen to this, listeners, equally impressive from my perspective, Buzzy, was that, and talk about this. You took on Larry Bird in some type of shootout?
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about that.
I could not get anybody to even listen to me at all. And, you know, I talked my way into the 76ers rookie camp. Matty Gukas was the coach. There was the rookies. There was 20-some-odd rookies. That's when I made the 246 out of 250. The rookies went nuts. Matty Gukas, like, he could have cared less. He shook my hand, and I flew up there on my dime. He goes, well, you know, thanks a lot for coming up. And that was another one I felt like strangling. I was like, man, you just saw something that you ain't got nobody that could even think of doing. And all you can say is thanks for coming up. And the assistant coaches then were Freddie Mad Dog Carter, and Jimmy Lynam. And Jimmy Lynam, bless him, South Philly, he grew up playing with Wilt. And Jimmy walked over to me and leans over and he goes, that was probably the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I said, thank you. And anyway, life goes on. I still can't get anybody. And Craig Sager, the late Craig Sager, God mm-hmm. rest his soul,
yes.
had heard that I'd made 738 free throws in a row, heard about the 246 out of 250, and I get a phone call out of the blue, and it's him. And he goes, do you think you could beat Larry Bird in the three-point shooting contest? And I said, Craig, I said, you get me in that three-point shoot contest. I said, not only will I beat him, I said, I'll win the whole thing and it won't even be close. I said, just get me in. I said, and I'll put up 10 grand of my own money. So Craig loved the idea. And he called me back 2 days later, and David Stern said no. He said, if you're not in the NBA, then you can't be in it. And I needed the publicity so bad. I was so bummed out. So two days later, Craig calls me again. He goes, I got an idea. He goes, what if we put you in a gym in Florida, in Fort Myers, and we know Larry's going to win. We'll fill the gym with people. We'll cut to you. We'll give you one chance to beat Larry Bird's score. And he goes, and if you beat him, then the following week we'll do a special about your teaching. And if you don't beat him, the theme will be, well, even great shooters crack under such extreme pressure. And I said, done, Craig, let's do it. So, sure enough, I'm in his gym, you know, and making a long story short, he won it. I think he won it with his score was like a 17. Meanwhile, I made 21 in a row, and just smoked him. And the next day, it was funny because I was married at the time, and I got a buddy that I grew up playing with, John Bellisle. And he was my backcourt mate when we won the state. And he's the guy that Coach Barrett, we used to get thrown out of practice, and he and I used to do all these goofy things. But in any event, John does a lot of good impersonations too. Anyway, about 1 o'clock, my wife comes in, and she goes, she's shaking. She says, Jerry West is on the phone. I said, Jerry West, my ass. Excuse my language. I said, that's John. So I grabbed the phone, and I won't use the language, but I was like, what the do you want? And he goes, excuse me? I said, come on, bro, stop, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, this is Jerry West. And I realized I heard the accent, and I was like, oh, my. It was legit. It was Jerry West. He goes, I saw, you know, what you did, blah, 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 blah. He goes, I'd like to have it come out here for like 10 days. My heart's going through my chest. And he goes, what do you charge? And I hadn't even thought, you know, I hadn't even thought about it. So I said, it's $500 a day plus expenses. He goes, great. Okay. You know, we want you for like 10 days. So I'm like, first paying gig. I'm like, yes, I'm in. 20 minutes later, the phone rings, and it's Jack McCluskey, who is the GM for the Pistons. saw what you did. I saw the special yesterday. He goes, what do you charge? And I say, I ain't stupid. 500 went over too easy. So I said I charge $1,000 a day plus expenses. He goes, well, that's great because we'd like you for a week. So now I go, oh, my God. I go, 1,000 ain't even enough. So I get a phone call. I don't know, it was 20 minutes, half hour later. It was Lenny Wilkins, who was in Cleveland at the time. And he goes, and I saw your, you know, blah, blah. He goes, what do you charge? I said, $2,000 a day plus expenses. He goes, do you have 2 weeks? I'm going, then I haven't hit the end of it yet. I said, please, phone, ring. You know, but in any event, long story short, I had like 9 teams call. And, but the phone call that mattered the most came from Jimmy Lynam because Matty Gukas got fired from the 76ers and Jimmy Lynam became the head coach. And he calls me and he goes, you want to be the first full-time shooting coach in NBA history? I said, well, what do you think? He says, we'll get your rear end up here to Philly. So I fly up to Philly and we're leaving Philly airport and we're in the car like 40 minutes. We're going out in the country. And I said, where are we going? He goes, we're going to Harold Katz's house. And Harold Katz was the owner of the Sixers. I said, for what? He goes, well, Jimmy was a schemer, you know, South Philly schemer. And he goes, I got a feeling if you can teach Harold Katz how to shoot, he'll hire you. I said, you got to be kidding me. He goes, no. I said, how old is he? He goes, probably 50-something. I said, when's the last time he played ball? He goes, probably high school. I said, all right, whatever. We drive. Now, this man, I don't know if y'all know who Harold Katz is, but Harold Katz invented Nutrisystems and sold it for like $300 million back in 1980, whatever. And he bought the Sixers because he loved basketball. Mm-hmm. So he got a palace. And not only next to the palace, he's got another palace that has a full-court tennis court, Olympic pool, full-court basketball court. Jimmy introduces me to him, and Harold Katz, he's got this big cigar, you know, like big stogie. And he's like, reminding me of like Edward G. Robinson from the gangster movies, you know.
Yeah.
He's like, you can teach me how to shoot, huh, kid? You know, so anyway, I go out on the court with Harold Katz, and I start doing my thing. And 50 minutes later, he made 42 foul shots in a row. Walks off the court, looks at Jimmy, and he goes, hire the kid. And then, boom, that was it. That's how I got in. I'll never forget it because I swear, he sounded like Edward G. Robinson. You know, it was like, hire the kid. Yeah. And that's how I got in. The ironic part is, 3 years later, who calls me begging me to come to work? Matty Gukas. He got the head coaching job with the Magic.
Mm-hmm.
The same one, it was like, thanks for coming up. It's now, you know, funny how life has its twists and turns, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And Buzz Brayman is in the coach's corner. And, Buzzy, I would be remiss not to mention that initially, and I don't know whether it was on a volunteer basis just to get your name out, but the first person who brought you in was a very good friend of mine, a guy I admire so much, Coach Bob Wade.
Oh, let me tell you, that was, oh man, I'll tell you, I had a friend at the time. I was living in Miami in the car business. Maryland, this is Brian Williams' freshman year. They had just lost like 3 games in a row. Brian, you know, could not make a free throw. So I got the article. I didn't even call Coach Wade. I flew up there. I go to Cole Fieldhouse. They're practicing. I come down after practice, and I introduced myself, and he wasn't warmed up to me at all either. And he was like, what do you want? I said, I want you to watch. I said, I want to work with Brian for an hour. I want you to watch. And if you don't like what I do, then I'll turn around and take my butt back to Miami. I said, this is all on my dime anyway. And he said, I'm not interested. So I turned around and I flew home. Two nights later, they play, and Brian misses 2 1-and-1s at the end of the game. They lose again. This time, my phone rings, and it's Coach Wade, and asked me if I could come back up. I said, I'm on the next plane. So I fly up. They had a three-day break before they flew out to Notre Dame, and I changed Brian's shot with Coach Wade sitting there on the bench, changed it from A to Z because he was doing all five things wrong. And I'll make a long story short. His first 15 games, he shot 42% from the foul line. His last 16 games, he shot 86% from the foul line. And Coach Wade and I became – he asked me to stay, you know, for the rest of the season and work with the team, which I did. And I tell you, I forget that part of my life. And I don't know why, because Coach Wade could have just as easily not called me, not had me work with Brian. But that's really one of the first things that opened people's eyes and what I call a myth buster, because people say that you should not mess with anybody's shot during the season, especially during the season. And I say that that's bull. And I proved it, you know, right there. So in 3 days, to go from 42 to 86% was an amazing thing. And I haven't seen Coach Wade since then, but when you see him, I owe him a big debt of gratitude.
Well, he's probably listening.
He's probably listening,
so you can tell him right now.
I got a big plug from Billy Packer on TV when they played Georgia Tech. He mispronounced my name, but it was. He said Buzz Brahman. I was like, Billy, what? But anyway, you know, he mentioned me on TV, and Brian and I became close, and Teon McCoy. They used to come down and stay at our house, you know, in the summer, and God rest his soul, because you know what happened to Brian. So
talk about
a tragedy. My God.
Yeah.
For some jewelry.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So
now let's talk about one of your more.
God bless.
Let's talk about one of your more challenging students, so to speak, in shooting. But man, you turned him around, and I'm talking about the big fella, Shaq O'Neal.
Yep. Well, Shaq is. First of all, one of the nicest human beings walking the planet. At that time, he didn't care if he made a free throw or not. It just didn't matter. So to put the work in, he didn't want to do it, and he wouldn't do it, and you couldn't make him do it. I made him do it one time, and I got to tell you, this you talk about almost having a heart attack. The year that we went to the finals, the last game of the season was in Madison Square Garden. It was a meaningless game because the playoffs were already set. It was a Sunday game, and Thursday we opened up against Boston. And Shaq, the last, third of the season, was shooting about 31% from the line. He was just strong. I mean, literally, it was embarrassing. And this game's on – I'm sitting on the bench, and you know when the camera's on, you know the red light. You see, you know the red light's on.
Sure. Yeah.
And I see this camera in Madison Square Garden, and the camera's on me, and you know I ain't thinking nothing about it because you know I've been on TV before. It ain't that big a deal. And I look over the other side, and the other camera's on me, and then I turned around, and there's another camera on me, and now I got it figured out. They are setting me up for failure on Thursday because they're going to be like, that's the dude. That's that, you know, this is the guy they hired. And all I could see was my career going like down, you know, like down the tubes. So the game against New York, he goes 0 for 11, three air balls. After one of the air balls, the next shot, you know, he's shooting two, shoots an air ball. The second one hits the backboard so hard it did, it missed the rim. It didn't touch the rim coming out. So I'm sitting here going, oh, my God, my life is over. I'm done. And Hubie Brown is doing the game. And Hubie doesn't like me even a little bit. Hubie doesn't like anybody unless you played in the NBA. So if you didn't play, you need to be sitting up there watching. So he's doing the game on top of everything else on Thursday. And I'm going, oh, my God, I'm so dead that this is a joke. So I get on the plane flying back to Orlando, and I grab Shaq. I take him into the little video room. I said, listen, I said, we got 4 days. I said, I got two things. You and me are going to spend 3 hours a day for the next 4 days working on two things. I said, if we do these two things, I'll get your head back above the water. I said, but if you don't, you're going to be shooting 43 free throws a game, and we can't win. I said, will you give me the 3 hours? Will you give it to me? And there was a pause, Coach, I swear. You know, what felt like 30 seconds probably was five. But I wasn't sure if he was going to say yes or not. And he goes, I will do it. Now, the thing is, Shaq is a night owl. So when does he want to shoot? He wants to shoot at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, man. Where we go to Victor Brick's Club, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I start. And we get done with this session, and the session is terrible. I mean, this was Sunday night after we got back. It was terrible. I go home. I'm going, oh, my God, this is not going to work. So Monday, I try something else. And Monday is a absolute disaster. It literally is like, oh, my God, I think I'd have a better shot with Stevie Wonder. This is not going to work. So it's now Tuesday, and it's a little better. Wednesday, for some reason, something clicked. And I'm going, this will work, but not when the lights are on. I go, one more day. So we go Thursday night, and it's pretty good. Thursday morning, it's pretty good. Now it's game time. I walk out on the court early just to check on him, and he's doing it what we were doing, and it was all right. Game starts. I see the cameras are all over me. They're all over me, and I'm telling you, Coach, I'm sweating. I'm trying to look like James Bond, but inside, I'm more like Urkel. So, anyway, the game ain't 20 seconds in, he gets fouled. And every red light, every camera, every is on me. And he swishes both of them. And I'm like, you know, your mind starts playing tricks. I go, okay, even if you miss the next two, it's 2 for 4. It's not bad. He gets fouled again. He makes these two. He's now 10 for 10. After he's 10 for 10, I'm sitting back on that bench. If you could have given me a stogie and a brandy, I was like looking at Shaq going at her, that's my man. You know, it was. He ends up 14 for 16 in the first game. And I know Hubie Brown was waiting to kill me, but he couldn't. You know, because now the script got flipped. And now he can only say, you know, nice things. We end up beating Boston. He shot like 77%. And the bottom line is we have to beat now it's time for the Bulls. And I grabbed him and I said, we're gonna go to work. We got 2 days and we're gonna work. And I still have the text message because he shot in a 6-game series, he shot 85% against the Bulls. And I have a text from him that still that says, thanks for helping me beat the Bulls. And you know, we ended up, you know, in the finals and lost, and you know, never did really have the time to really change the shot to make it permanent. And when I had the opportunity, when Jimmy went to Washington, Chris Webber had heard about me, and Chris was in Washington, and Jimmy called me up, and he goes, I need you here. Chris wants you here. Get your butt up here now. And I was like, you know what? I'm getting nowhere with Shaq, and if I stay here, it's going to ruin my career. So that's when I jumped, and, you know, Chris was like, you know, I learned so much from Shaq because I was a young coach. And when Shaq said to me, I'm just not comfortable doing this. Like right now I'm 65 years old. That time I was like 33, 34. If he said that to me now, I don't give a damn what you're comfortable with now. I would have said, I ain't comfortable with you shooting 31%. How about that? Well, anyway, I wasn't mature enough, you know, and so I consider what happened back then not his fault, it was my fault, because I wasn't a good enough coach. And then I get up with Chris, and I got to change everything with Chris. And Chris says to me, he goes, I don't really think I can do this. He goes, this feels so uncomfortable. And I looked at Chris, and I said, let me tell you something, Chris. I said, you ain't got no choice. I said, we are doing this. I said, I don't care how long it takes. I said, you're going to trust me because I'm going to change your world and change your life. And when we're done, I said, when you go into the Hall of Fame, I said, I'm going to be right standing next to you, literally. And I said, you don't have a choice. And if I said that to Shaq, I would have had Shaq at 80%. But I got Chris there. And, you know, I learned a lot. Because I honestly was not good enough as a coach, you know, to get Shaq to do what I should have been able to do, like I did with Chris. But it worked out great, and Chris has been so good to me, sending me players and, you know, mentions me on TV all the time. And, you know, that's what happened. And one of the best parts that ever happened was at Shaq's house. In 98, I was coaching in Washington. He called me up. He wanted me to come down for a few days. I came down 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm eating breakfast with him in the kitchen. And you know Shaq's house? His house is 68,000 square feet.
Wow.
So, oh, yeah. You walk in, there's segways. Like, you can go around his house in a segway. So, we're in the kitchen, and this black dude comes in, like the biggest dude I've ever seen. You know how those guys are like, this is like, this guy's 6'8", but I mean, this dude is wide, you know what I mean? You know, like, beat out. And he got a suit on, shades, and he starts staring at me. And then he walks out. And I looked at Shaq, I said, what the heck was that? And 10 seconds later, Michael Jackson walked in.
Wow.
Oh, I got to spend I got to spend 5 hours with Michael Jackson and Shaq. So that was one of the highlights. That's why when people say, you know how much money you'd be worth if you'd have stayed in the car business, I go, listen, man, first of all, I made my own money. Number two, I can't buy the memories that I have from my career. You know, I wouldn't trade it for nothing. So.
Wow, boy, just a great storyteller. We could talk all night. We've got about 13 minutes left, and I want to ask two questions as it pertains to shooting. First question is, why are some shooters good from the field but not so good from the free throw line?
That's, you know what? That's a great question, and I'll say this. I don't want to say there's a couple things that are unknown, but I'll say this to you. There are guys that that can hit a golf ball but can't putt. Mm-hmm. And I always used to ask myself, how can a guy, you know, hit a ball 220 yards to within 6 feet and can't get close on a putt? And, you know, one of the greatest, well, Coach, you're a golfer. One of the greatest ball strikers to ever play golf was Mo Norman. And Mo Norman's from Canada. And if you ask Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods who the greatest golf swinger ever played, they'll say Ben Hogan and Mo Norman. And Mo Norman could not putt. But he could hit a flag stick, you know, from 250 yards. Personally, this is what I think happens. I think sometimes when your mechanics are not great, but you just, without thinking, catch it and shoot it, you know, you're in the flow. Mm-hmm. The minute you start thinking about it with the bounces and the 10 seconds, it becomes like a putt. You overthink it. And the other thing that happens is when you have faults in your shot, some people can control it. Like, I'm gonna tell you who had a terrible shot but could also shoot free throws. Kenny Smith's shot is all wrong. That shot should not work. He's an exception to the rule. And same with Larry Bird. If Larry Bird wanted to teach my kid how to shoot, that ain't going to happen.
No.
My kid ain't going to shoot like that. But he could shoot free throws and jump shots. But when you have a mechanic that's wrong, when you do it at a certain speed, your body intrinsically figures out how to compensate. When you go to the free throw line, it slows up.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were able to compensate, you're not able to compensate at a slower speed. And it can work both ways. You got guys that can make free throws that can't make a jump shot. And because the flaw, when it's speeded up, doesn't work because they can't control the ball. They can only do it at a slower tempo. You know, remember Karl Malone?
Sure.
You used to take Karl Malone an hour and a half to shoot a free throw. And, you know, but he raised it really slow because his mechanics were really bad. And when he finally got him straightened out, he could only do it at a really, really slow pace. And the only explanation is that the faults that are in the shot, and it's hard to talk, you know, it's hard to talk about it without, you know, giving away or explaining what the faults act, the five parts are.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
When they're speeded up, some guys can control it. When you slow it down, you can't. And then there's some guys that if they're slowed, they can control better, and when it's speeded up, they can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what's worse than that? How about the guys, you know Charles Barkley's golf swing, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it.
Yeah. Well, you remember, I don't know if y'all remember Chris Dudley, but there's guys that have hitches
right
in their shot, you know, where they take it up and then they stop. And then they go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's people always say to me, can you teach anybody to shoot? And I always say this, there's only two kinds of players that I can't help. I can't help you if you don't care. Mm-hmm. It's like when I was with Philly, you know, Charles didn't care if he made a shot or not. That wasn't his thing. So could I help him? I could, but he didn't want it. If you don't want it, then there's no reason. And the other are the players that have the hitch, because I don't know what happens in their brain, because you can't just say, hey, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't tell that hitch you can tell Charles not to do it, and he'll say, okay, but it just happened, you know. So I can't mess with hitches and people that don't care.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've got about 10 minutes left. And the other question that I have is, I've always said that to be the man, the number one option, a scorer, obviously you have to have a physical skill set, be able to shoot the ball, et cetera.
Yes.
But talk about the mental aspect of shooting, confidence, and envisioning the ball going in actually before you shoot it. Because good shooters think that every time that they launch it, it's going in.
There's no question. There's no question. And, you know, it is amazing because, I'm not a big LeBron fan, especially if you ask who's better, Jordan or LeBron. If LeBron had MJ's or Kobe's jump shot, then LeBron would be probably the best player to ever play. But LeBron knows that his jump shot is a little shaky. So, but Larry Bird, Reggie Miller, MJ, Kobe, they know their ball's going in. And whether their mechanics are sound or not, you know, you wouldn't want Reggie Miller teaching your kid either. But I had two things happen to me in the NBA that literally brought a tear to my eye. I was told that Larry Bird and Reggie Miller get to the gym 4 hours before game time and shoot. And I'm sitting there going, let me tell you something. I only know three people that would do something like that. Me, Eddie Peterson, and Brian Maggett. And I remember the first time we played Boston in the old Boston Garden. I took a cab to the old Boston Garden. I didn't even know where I was going. And I'm trying to I end up on the second floor, and literally like out of a movie, there's only one light on, a ball boy, and Larry Bird, and he is drenched in sweat shooting. And I was sitting there, you know, literally with a tear, going, my God, it's true. And then first time we played Indiana, and it was the same thing with Reggie Miller. It's 4 hours before game time, and this man is in a serious, serious sweat. So when you put in that kind of work, you know that you ain't going to let nobody else take the game winner. You know, it's going to be you because you've put that work in, you know, and that's, you know, what's the shooter's mentality? To me, that's it's knowing that you've done the work and the confidence in your technique that you've mastered. And Michael's technique was almost perfect. Kobe's was almost perfect. Larry's was terrible. Reggie Miller's was terrible, but they both figured out, Reggie and Larry figured out how to compensate and make it work. And that's all that mattered, because they knew that when they shot the ball's going in, and there ain't nobody else that's going to take the shot. And that's where I fault a lot of players. You know, do you want the ball with 2-3 seconds left or not? You know, I sometimes used to fault LeBron because he might make the correct pass, but the guy who you just passed it to don't want it.
That's right, yeah.
Now you're asking a guy who don't want the ball to make an 18-footer from the baseline.
That's right.
And Michael would never put a guy in that position. You know what I mean?
No.
He's going to shoot himself, dunk it, or he's going to tell Kerr, like he did in that game, be ready.
That's right, you know?
There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, by the way, I'm not the golfer. My producer, Rick Hampton, he's the golfer, and he's saying, man, this is so good. It is helping my golf game because, again, it's all muscle memory, and
it's
all, you know, hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
the last.
I have so many conversations with Penny because Penny loves golf and he plays with Michael a lot down here in West Palm. And you know, it's and Coach, you know, if you're a golfer, you have right now at your age, like at my age, I have a certain amount of flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger can't twist the way he did before.
No.
And my kid, Penny, flies. He'll take golf lessons from Butch Harmon, then fly to this one, fly to that one. And I keep saying, bro, I said, you got too many chefs in the kitchen. I said, you got X flexibility. I said, you need to find one guy that understands what your physical limitations are and build your mechanics from what you're capable of because your hand-eye is beyond belief. But just because you see somebody on TV make a turn that's like a full circle, that's not you anymore. You know, you got to figure out, you know, the 50-year-old version, just like Tiger did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this ain't Tiger. You know, he actually won, you know, one of the major tournaments with a rebuilt stroke, with a bad back and a bad knee, because he restructured his golf swing within his own capabilities. That's it. You know.
Yeah.
That's,
wow. Yeah. Well, look, we've got 3 minutes left, and I want you to use them as you see fit. Buzzy, I've got to tell you, man, I've been in radio now for 20-plus years. I've interviewed like a who's who. But this has been one of the more enjoyable, informative, and I guess because I've always been fascinated by shooting, and I could talk shooting and the fundamentals and the art of it all night long, and you're the best, man. So take these last two minutes as you see fit.
Well, I'll say this. I got very lucky that I met Eddie Peterson when I was in eighth grade by sheer coincidence at White Oak Junior High School. I was in there trying to figure out what's the matter with me because I'm ambidextrous. I'm left-handed actually, but I do half things left-handed, half things right-handed, and I'm very coordinated. But I just couldn't make a shot. And in June, I'm trying to figure out why I can't make a shot because it don't make any sense. And in walks this dude with his brother. I don't know from Adam. And he's making every shot, and it happens to be Eddie. And I, you know how, like, you know, you're at a court and you look down at the other end just to see if the other guy can play or not. I'm peeking down there. This guy's running 30 and 40 shots in a row, and I'm going, I'm looking up, you know, to the heavens going, hey, gee, thanks a lot. You bring this guy in here and what, rub salt in my wounds, you know, but I did walk down and introduce myself, and which was probably the smartest thing I ever did, and I learned so much, you know. It's just like the coincidence of Eddie and I running into Brian, and you know, I always tell NBA players and I tell campers for 21 years, I say, listen, I'm going to give you a goal. I'm going to give you a map to a pot of gold. And if I give you the map and tell you that you got to do X things, the only question is, are you going to follow this map? I said, because I'm here this week and I'm going to get everybody's shot set up perfect. The only question is going to be when I see you next year,
sure,
is whether you took what I said and threw it out the window or you took the map and you worked.
Yeah.
I say, I'll know next year when you come back. And, you know, I can show you. If I spend an hour with you, I'll have your shot set up perfect.
Sure.
But I'll impose my will. I'll force you to do it. But it's not muscle memory. It's just borrowed. Now we got to do the work till the thought process goes away. And if you do that, then, like I say, you only got to do it one time.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know,
if you don't do it, you're good luck. You can spend your whole career, you know, Dwight Howard can't make a shot. You tell me he's not coordinated enough to make a shot?
Well,
and let me tell you something before we go.
Yeah,
I don't even like this guy a little bit, so I shouldn't even say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. They hired Mark Price to be his shooting coach, and he dropped 9 points. So just because you can do a skill doesn't mean you can teach it.
That's
one thing. And the second thing is, like I said, are you telling me Dwight Howard's not coordinated enough to make a free throw, or is he doing something wrong? I'm telling you, he's doing something wrong.
You are the best, and I really love your quote in closing. You said that I don't mind putting on demonstrations, but I'm a teacher. I'm not a carnival act.
Yeah,
amen.
That's it. This
has been great. And for the listeners who want more of this, I knew I had the vision that this was going to be outstanding. So you'll get a part two. You'll get an encore of the Shot Doctor, Buzzy Brayman, this 11 a.m. Eastern Time on my radio show, In and Out of Sports. So be tuned in for that. Buzzy, thank you, man. You are the best, and I love trash talking, man.
You guys are the best host because you bring it out of the guests, and that's you guys are like Johnny Carson. That's why you guys are this good.
Yeah.
You make the guests look good.
Well, thank you.
I can't make a shot, but you all make it sound like I can.
No. Hey, we're all from D.C. We're not going for the card, man. We know that you shot down.
I can't get a game of horse? Dang.
Not with me, no. Thanks, Buzz. Thank you.
All right, y'all.
All right, and folks, that was the Shot Doctor, Buzzy Brayman. I know you enjoyed that. Well, tomorrow at 7 p.m., we will be joined by Suzanne Harjo. She is the number one advocate for Native Americans and getting rid of the nicknames. And after so many years of court battles and protests, the Washington football team dropped the racist name. And so we will hear from Suzanne Harjo tomorrow in the Coach's Corner at 7 p.m. And I want to thank our sponsors, Horton's Funeral Service. You can locate them on 600 Kennedy Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. Phone number 202-829-9000. And Dr. Edward T. Buford, 202-667-8818 on U Street, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. And I want to thank, as always, the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. You can go to them pull up the past shows as well as this outstanding show tonight. Rick Hampton, my producer, great job. And, folks, as I said, tomorrow, 7 p.m., Suzanne Harjo visits In the Locker Room, the Coach's Corner. But until then, make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. And we'll see you next
to a 30-second demo. Go premium to download the